Scottish artist Rowena Comrie has been visiting Indiana this spring and will be sharing her paintings in two exhibitions at the Ivy Tech John Waldron Art Center and the Oliver Winery Downtown Gallery. A professional member of the Society of Scottish Artists and president of the Scottish Artists Union, Comrie has been shortlisted for the Aspect Prize, a distinction that recognizes outstanding contemporary painting in Scotland. I went to look at Comrie's paintings on the eve of their Bloomington debut.
We're sitting here in your studio, or your makeshift studio in Susan's house, with all of your beautiful paintings in front of us. You set yourself a bit of a challenge. You brought a few things in your suitcase, some of your watercolors, but a large part of the work that you're going to be showing you've produced since you've arrived.
Yes, that's quite right. I've made 21 canvases since I arrived, but this was the only feasible way I could possibly hope to bring an exhibition to the States. Otherwise, it would have been financially impossible for me. So I've just been painting full on since I got here, really, which has been a great experience. I quite enjoy that kind of intense period of working with a goal at the end of it. When I was working towards the Aspect Prize, it was similar in that I had to produce quite a lot of work in a very short space of time for that exhibition. But I had quite a few months to do that rather than weeks. So this has been unique to me. But I don't think I could have done it for much longer, to be honest, without burning out completely.
Well, tell us more about you, where you grew up and how you became an artist, where you studied.
Yeah, I was born in a place called Southend-on-Sea, which is in Essex in the southeast of England. And I went to university and studied fine art at Reading University, which is north of London in England. And then I had quite a varied career path until I made it to Scotland, where I've finally settled and worked full-time as a self-employed artist.
You moved to Scotland 30 years ago or so. Was it something about an artistic community there that provided appeal for you?
The artistic community in Scotland is fantastic. They're passionate, lively, committed, and mostly quite successful, I would say, on the international scene and the national and local scene. Glasgow is a fantastic place to be an artist in. I've only been there for 3 years. Before that, I was in a place called Aberdeen, which is on the northeast coast. And I was there for about 25 years, where I had my family, etc. But I moved to Scotland because it's such a stunning country to look at. And it's a fantastic place to live.
So scenery?
Well, partly scenery, but the truth of the matter is really that it was a romance that took me to Scotland in the first place.
I've had friends who've gone to the Hebrides or the Orkney Islands. It feels almost like the end of the earth in certain ways from the pictures I've seen. And I see some of these dark skies and island landscapes in your watercolors. It seems like being there on some kind of promontory, looking out to the sea, that seems like a really obvious place to start reckoning with the sublime.
Yeah, well, that's the traditional way of looking at it. In the 18th century, so much of the world had not been conquered. Everest hadn't been climbed, deserts hadn't been crossed, vast areas of the world were still unexplored. And so those areas were the receptacles for terror and fear, but excitement and curiosity at the same time. But of course, all that has now been done. Every inch of the world has been explored, I think. I think you can still have that sense of the sublime staring at a horizon, that mixture of fear and excitement. I certainly get it, which is why I paint the watercolours. But it's traditional. So that was why I wanted to try and make a contemporary idea of the sublime, which is why I came to flight.
Right. So you've made paintings exploring the motifs of air travel and power stations, especially nuclear power stations, to recapture that sense of the sublime in the contemporary landscape.
Yeah, I think I started looking at power stations when we visited this one, Sizewell B, and we went to the beach, and this huge, looming, amazingly ginormous, humongous building, really overpowering and threatening. And there's this beach next to it, and there were kids and families sitting on the beach, picnicking, sunbathing, apparently seemingly oblivious to the possibilities of what could happen with that nuclear power station looming over them.
It looks like Monet in the front with the children sort of looking for things in the hills, and then that big hulking structure in the back.
And I've put my planes going one in each direction. They just miss each other. You know, you could have an accident. Imagine if two planes crashed into each other above a power station, you know. Well, of course, something did happen in Japan. Oh, that was a natural disaster. But it just, that illustrates the horrendous possibilities. And so that led to a series of paintings about power stations, which I'm still working on. I try and drive out to them and make watercolours, which I then take back to the studio and make the oil paintings.
Is it a literal kind of a correlation or a literal translation of the watercolours to the final oil painting? Or
no, it's just remembering colour combinations or sensations or atmospheres. So it's not literal, no. It's very mysterious, and that's part of its charm.
You tend in your work to alternate between things that are strictly figurative, things that are strictly abstract, and then things that do both. Would you talk about your evolution there?
Well, the abstract work is what's going on inside me. I can do that for a while, but after a while, it loses its spontaneity and its edge, because you've been doing it for a period of time and it becomes routine. So I like to stop then at that point and do something in contrast. For example, figurative work or very detailed small scale work. I do that for a while until the same thing happens with that. I like everything to be really fresh to me. And I like variety, and I like doing lots of different things. I don't want to just make the same painting over and over again. So I just do what, I mean, that's part of why anybody wants to be an artist, I suppose. It's the freedom to do what you want, when you want, and use your creative self-expression as you please.
How can we even go about starting to describe your abstract work? Often it seems you have a white ground, and then you have areas of color, some of which are transparent, some of which are opaque, and you play with those contrasts. They all, I would say, retain a real freshness, whether it's on a large scale or a small scale. Maybe you can tell us about your technique. How do you make these paintings, and what is your medium, etc.?
Well, they're oil paints mixed with just the regular terps and linseed oil. I paint them on the floor, and I use a screen printing squeegee to spread the paint out. It's all about getting the consistency of the paint right, getting the proportion of oil and terps right. Different pigments need different quantities. They all react differently. So it's taken me a lot of years to develop those skills and to know with reasonable confidence what the paint is going to do when I start using it. It still surprises me. That's the thrill of it, really, not quite knowing how the paint is going to behave. These paintings are really more about the paint than anything else and how it behaves on the canvas. If it does what I hope it will do, or whether it kind of takes over. In a way, it's a battle between me and the paint. And I don't always win that battle. You know, there's been a hell of a lot of bad paintings before I've reached this point where I could confidently hope to make 21 paintings in 3 weeks.
In the paintings, one doesn't see the struggle. These are graceful paintings. And there's a real ease of expression, a kind of thing that they would call in Italian Renaissance paintings, sprezzatura. It's like dancers. There is a real ease and a gracefulness. The shapes resonate against one another, and the shapes are balanced over the canvas.
I think that might be because of the way I put the paint on, and the fact that it's not, the paintings are flat on the floor, and I'm using my whole body to make the marks. So they're very gestural. I guess probably if you watched me doing it, it would look like a bit of a dance, not a very graceful dance for me as a human being, but it's a very physical process. I'm constantly moving about, waving my arms about, you know, bending over, standing up. So yeah, that probably was a very good analogy.
Well, you say that the paintings are really about the paint and making these forms, but certainly there's a lot more going on than just the formal.
Not just that. It's also about the tension between shapes and the tension between colors, as well as it's getting tension and harmony at the same time.
What about this big idea of the sublime? You talk about it with regard to some of your figurative work. Is that at play here as well in your abstract work?
Well, I would like it to be. I'm not sure if I can verbalize that particularly well. In the abstract art is so subjective. I think one person's sublime painting could mean nothing to somebody else. So I don't want to make any hard and fast statements about that.
I asked before about the alternation from the abstract to the figurative in your work. Is it sometimes almost like taking refuge in the abstract to paint things that are not so programmatic?
Possibly, yes. I hadn't thought of that before, but the abstracts are definitely interior. You know, they're what's going on in my heart and my head, whereas the figurative work is more about what I can see. Mm-hmm. So it's the external.
You mentioned at one point in your biography that you were influenced quite early on by the color field expressionist, some of the American painters such as Morris Lewis. Yeah. Tell me about how you became enamored of those painters and how you are engaged in some of the same aesthetic issues.
Well, I became exposed to these artists, particularly the American abstract expressionists like Morris Lewis, Hans Hofmann, Rothko, all those guys, when I was a student at Reading University. They were new to me then, and I found it incredibly exciting, the freedom of that kind of way of applying paint, and I just really got into it and loved it. After I graduated, it wasn't so easy to carry on doing that, because it's not so easy to make large-scale paintings unless you've got the appropriate space. So I kind of deviated off into other tangents, but they've always been one of my first great loves, those artists. And I was so thrilled to see that huge Morris Lewis in the university art collection. I think that's probably the most interesting one I've seen. And, of course, a lot of the other artists in Chicago in the Art Institute and in the Indiana Art Museum, which I've been to as well. So that's been one of the big thrills of my trip, to actually see those paintings.
Well, I know that you don't think this is important, but I do think it's a fun fact about you, the painting that you made on the tarmac.
Well, that was for the BBC, for a program that was presented by a guy called Jonathan Meads, who makes programs about architecture. And he was doing one about Aberdeen, and the BBC needed something for the credits, and they wanted a 20-foot outline map of Scotland painted on tarmac. So it sounds simple, but it's actually wasn't that simple to do. But I did it, and Jonathan Meads lay in it, sort of prone on the ground, to do the introduction to his program. Fortunately, the weather was good when we did it.
You know, you've come to play a pretty important role in the lives of Scottish artists. You have assumed presidency of the Scottish Artists Union. Tell us about the union, how you came to be president, and what that organization does.
The Scottish Artists Union, well, it's a privilege to be the president and an honour, actually, to have that role. It's the representative voice for visual and applied artists in Scotland, and it's the only trade union of its kind in the UK. What we do is we lobby on behalf of visual artists working in Scotland, defending their rights, expanding their benefits, and fighting to make their professional practice a means to support a better quality of life. Sadly, statistically, visual artists remain at the bottom of the income ladder for all the art forms, not just visual art.
Is there an underdog status among Scottish artists?
I don't think we would like to call ourselves underdogs. It's more a case of trying to alter the culture and the general perception of the value of artists in the community. That's what we have to do. I think a lot of average Joes probably don't really think about how much art is part of their life. You know, everything you use has been designed by somebody at some point. Every decorative item you have in your home at some point in its early state would have probably come from an artist's idea. And yet it's usually the artists that are at the bottom of a kind of inverted pyramid when it comes to earning money. And so many industries are dependent on artists. the art materials industries, the whole gallery system, even things like van drivers for transporting work about. There's a huge amount of other industry that relies on the individual artists making art to survive, and yet the artist doesn't benefit from any of that. The union works towards establishing recognised rates of pay for visual artists, exhibition payment rights, established rates of pay for workshops, etc. We've been around for about 12 years now. We've got nearly 1,000 members, and we offer benefits to our members, and we offer help and advice with contracts, copyright issues. Any problems any of our members have, they're free to come and get advice and help from the union.
Mm-hmm. And so you do a fair bit of promotion or publicity?
Well, we do as much as we can, but as we're all volunteers, you know, there's a limited amount of time that you can give to it. At present, we're just setting up a series of roadshows where we're taking the union around Scotland to promote it. And that's just in the planning stages at the moment. We're actually the Scottish representative at the European Council of Artists, which is an umbrella organisation for all these different groups in different countries to promote benefits for artists and better working conditions for artists. And the Scottish Artists Union is the official representative to them from Scotland.
Your trip here to the US has been funded in part by Creative Scotland. So what is that agency, and how do they go about supporting artists in Scotland?
Creative Scotland is the funding body for the arts in Scotland. Ultimately, they receive their money from the Scottish Government and various other sources, the National Lottery, for example. But public funding for artists is facilitated through them. So all the arts, not just the visual arts, across the board, they are the National Arts Organisation. But if you're an artist and you want to apply for some funding, they're who you go to initially.
It sounds like there is a pretty substantial infrastructure for artists in Scotland. For example, I understand that when you were in Aberdeen, you were working in a WASPS studio. That's another acronym that's new to us.
WASPS stands for Workshop and Artists Studio Provision Scotland. They're a nationwide organisation. They currently house 650 artists and 22 arts organisations in 19 buildings across Scotland. So they're a major player in the arts world of Scotland. There are other studio organisations in Scotland and in Glasgow. There's quite a few. There's a healthy studio provision scene, I would say. I have a WASPS studio in Glasgow now. In fact, I'm the tenants rep in the WASPS in Glasgow, which means if any of the tenants have issues, they come through me to take them to the organisation.
It seems you're the unusual artist who is not only has a very lively studio practice, but you're also willing to go to meetings, play a role of a sort of administrator in certain aspects. Now, it's not every artist who's willing to do that kind of organising and play that kind of leadership role at the same time. I find it an interesting combination.
But I'm just always really curious about how things work, how systems work, how artists survive, how artists in other countries survive. And I guess that's led me into some of these activities. Just curiosity, really, and caring about it. I suppose because it's my life and I'm committed to it, then it makes sense to become involved in organisations that improve things for my profession.
Paintings by Scottish artist Rowena Comrie are on view at two Bloomington locations this month, the Ivy Tech John Waldron Arts Centre through June 1st, and at the Oliver Winery Downtown Gallery through July 31st. You may preview Comrie's paintings on our website at wfiu.org/arts.